So let's go on to talk about your next case, the 62-year-old lady.
So you wanted an example of some squamous patients treated with immunotherapy. So I have two small cases, little vignettes.
Okay.
So one did well, one did badly. So the first lady is a 62-year-old female. Now, she's a 60-pack-year smoker, two packs a day for 30 years. And she noticed this big, enlarging, painless mass at the base of her left side of her neck. And she kind of, like, in the way that some people do who are not that into their health, she kind of blew it off. Sure, it'll just go away. And then she works in a packaging factory, and she's lifting a cardboard box filled with some kind of food stuff. And she breaks her humerus. You know, minimal exertion, boom, her humerus breaks, pathological fracture. And the workup shows a big central carinal mass, satellite nodules in both lungs, bilateral mediastinal nodes, that large, what turned out to be a left supraclavicular fossa, lymph node is about 3 centimeters, and multiple bone metastases. She got a humerus fixed, and then it was irradiated. The pathology from the humerus showed P63 positive squamous lung cancer. We did the molecular testing. Like I said, if this was my mother, I'd still do the testing. She didn't have any actionable abnormalities, and her PD-L1 score was great. It was 80%. It was also high like the first lady, but this is in a very different setting. Her brain MRI was normal.
Could I just ask, because you made the point before about testing in squamous cell.
Yeah.
So, for example, and you tested this lady, but where did you have tissue from? And in her, how comfortable were you that it was squamous?
We had tissue because she had an orthopedic operation and we got the reamings from that.
So you had plenty of tissue.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, one of the bits where I feel least comfortable is when they don't do an immunohistochemistry-based diagnosis of squamous. Some guy looking down the microscope saying, this looks like squamous. We know from some great studies from University of North Carolina that before the days of immunohistochemistry, the kappa value for agreement on squamous was something like 0.4. So your definition of squamous down the microscope and mine, you know, it's a toss of a coin.
That's scary.
So that's why I would, at least on the basis of that, I'm never going to decide not to give you molecular testing on the basis of a subjective determination. With P63 and other molecular markers for squamous, I think the kappa value would be a lot higher.
So this lady, next step was pembrolizumab.
So she went on pembrolizumab first line. She's a classic person, you know. So she's got squamous cancer. She doesn't have a driver oncogene. She's a smoker, and she has a high tumor proportion score. And she goes on it, and it's like a dream for her. She is the woman in the TV adverts. Her mass softened and shrank probably within about a week. She knew it was working. You know, her arm's still in a sling, but she says the pain in her arm's getting better, but that could be from orthopedic surgery and radiation, who knows. And when we did a first scan, she has a near complete response. Now, one of the questions is, when do you do the first scan? I very much think that immunotherapy isn't that different from all of these other treatments. And so I don't like the idea of waiting too long. So I scan her at 6 weeks and she was responding nicely. I worry when people are we're so engaged in the idea of immunotherapy being a miracle that we don't look for 3 months. And you go, well, what if it's not working? So I don't buy into, well, what if it's pseudoprogression? The pseudoprogression rate in non-small cell lung cancer is really low. So most of the time, progression is progression.
Do you go by the melanoma approach to pseudoprogression that we started hearing a few years ago, which is if you see someone imaging, but the patient still feels well, don't worry about it, keep going?
Yeah, I mean, if the patient says, I'm feeling better, if you believe in serum tumor markers, if they're coming down, particularly if there's just like some new lesions, then you'd buy it. It's interesting, David Gandara did a nice study looking at the OAK study with atezolizumab at this year's ASCO, and he looked at the people who had progressed, who continued to get atezolizumab, and then how many of them later responded. In his data set, it was about 7%, so you could say the pseudo-progression rate is 7%, but the issue there is not everybody continued to get the atezolizumab, so a whole group of people, somebody said, well, I don't think this is pseudo-progression, I didn't. So maybe the denominator is probably double that, and certainly from a similar study by the FDA, the pseudo-progression rate in lung cancer is probably about 2%.
So I see this lady still is out there in a great response, but she became hypothyroid. That's interesting.
Well, so I think as we put people on these immunotherapies, it is fairly common to get some kind of autoimmune side effects. They don't all have to be the house is burning down and a rip-roaring pneumonitis. This lady manifested some fatigue. Her TSH had gone up to something like 19. We checked her free T3 and T4, and her free T3 was low, and she went on replacement, and she's fine. And so I think we've gone from a medical oncologist who deals in chemotherapy to now we have targeted therapy that messes up various things. We have now immunotherapy that messes up things. We are re-engaging with our general medical roots.
We did a thing a couple of days ago on CAR T therapy. You guys are maybe getting into intensive care therapy too.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, but it's pretty exciting. Anyhow,